Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on a very interesting topic, government contracts. More local, state, and federal governments are looking to outsource collection of delinquent receivables with private collection agencies. So there are a lot of opportunities out there for collection agencies to win new business if they know what to look for and what to say. We're fortunate to have Nick Bernardo from MyGovWatch to share his insights and details about this topic with us today. This webinar is being generously sponsored by MyGovWatch. You'll get the chance to hear more about them during our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the armed industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the armed industry. The site is free for anyone to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me now tell you a little bit about today's speaker. Nick Bernardo is and has been president of MyGovWatch.com since 2003. The MyGovWatch.com portal is the company's flagship service offering and serves some of the best known large and small companies and in the collections industry today. The 2018 relaunch of the site for the first time allows anyone to create a free account with pay-as-you-go options or to access detailed information on government contracts on an unlimited basis. His 20-year career includes broad-based experience in business-to-business marketing, information services development, professional services marketing, third-party reselling, and nonprofit fundraising. He is also the manager of FedCetera, a business development organization, as the term is used in federal regulations, that works with companies seeking to participate in federal contracting and subcontracting opportunities in collections. The format for today's webinar will be a presentation from Nick. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and Nick will get to them as the discussion or once his presentation is concluded. To submit a question, please type it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With that, let me introduce Nick Bernardo to begin his presentation. Nick?
Mike, thank you so much for the introduction and for the opportunity to provide this content today. And I just want to thank everyone who is on the call, just taking a look at some of the folks that signed up. It seems to be a very interesting mix of .com email addresses with a few .gov and .edu email addresses sprinkled through as well. And the topic of government contracting in general, as Mike has mentioned, is sort of the flagship focus of the company through the MyGovWatch website for the first time this year, catering to every industry, although this teleseminar is specific to debt collection. And I just start with this press release that we did a few years ago, and it's important that people realize that there are opportunities in government contracting. So we looked at 100 contract awards a few years ago, and we're planning on redoing this research to see if the numbers bear out again. And we found that about 67% of those are real opportunities. And we define real opportunity in the following way. Of the 100 awards we looked at, 67 of the 100 were either A, contracts where they never had a collection vendor before, B, contracts where the awards resulted in a vendor turning over, or C, multiple award contracts where there are multiple contractors and at least one of them turned over or an additional one was added. So we realized that one of the most significant things in terms of developing a strategy to pursue government contracts is simply not banging your head against the wall and wasting time on opportunities that you would not want if you won, or opportunities that you simply could never win. And that really is what has driven the growth of MyGovWatch.com, because the market demanded a way for people interested in government contracting to have enough information to make good decisions about what to bid on and how to bid on it without having to spend massive amounts of time getting to that point. We estimate that in order to have sufficient information to bid on individual government contracts, we look at it to be about a 15 to 20 hour commitment just to get to the point where you understand enough about the contract to be able to make a decision on whether or not to pursue it. So with thousands of contracts out there, that is a time commitment of tens of thousands of hours of research that clearly we are eliminating for companies that are using mygovwatch.com. Although this teleseminar will be promotional, I want to stress that everything that we'll be talking about are things that you could do yourself if you had only one or two or three contracts that you really cared about. You could certainly replicate some of the things that we're doing if you're targeting a small number of contracts. And what we're in essence doing is we are exercising our rights as citizens in this country to access publicly available documents through various open records laws all around the country. So we have the Federal Freedom of Information Act that applies to federal contracting opportunities, although that's a tougher nut to crack. We also have open records laws at the state level, and those vary by state, just like debt collection laws. But by and large, across the country, you are able to obtain information about how different contracts are awarded simply by following the correct process, which can sometimes be contentious. They don't always want to do it, or sometimes it can be drawn out because even though they have the intention of fulfilling your request for information to find out about different contract awards, oftentimes they're just not good at doing it, if you can believe that. I know that probably shocks you. So the open records laws is sort of the magic behind what we're doing. We're going to sort of make the point about how you can obtain this kind of information and how you can use it to your advantage by looking at individual contract opportunities and seeing what kinds of information is available at the contract level that might help you make bid or no bid decisions in terms of things that you might want to pursue. So the first opportunity that we're going to look at is actually something, an RFP that was issued by Georgia Gwinnett College. Here it is. And that is actually due in, I guess, about 2 weeks. And we're just going to see what we have available on this and information that you could have at your fingertips if you were to pursue that information in advance of the RFP. And I should make mention of this. So a lot of these, or most of these contracts are recurring contracts. You can see here that in 2013, there are documents, right, that are in the archives. And then 2018, there are documents. So after the 2013 contracts were awarded, you would need to go and get these documents after contracts are signed, because once the 2018 RFP comes out, there's no chance you're going to be able to get them in time to help your information gathering and use it for that bid process. So it should also be said that sometimes it can take 3 to 6 months to get these people at the local or state government level to comply with the law that says they must follow, pardon me, to give people documents when they are requested in compliance with law. So for this particular opportunity, even if you have a free account on the site, you're able to do what's called an insider download. And what that gets you, it basically gets you three things. It gets you our delivery of procurement documents for the current bid. It also gets you the ability to submit questions to the buyer during the bid process in an anonymous fashion through the site. But finally, what it also gets you would be the results of the 2013 bid process at your fingertips, so you can try to figure out whether or not it makes sense to pursue this opportunity that has a due date of 11/29. So here we have the Georgia Gwinnett College RFP from 2013. And these are documents that we were able to obtain through the open records law in Georgia. And in different states, they might call it something different. Here in New Jersey, they call it ORPA, or OPRA, I think it is. We have, they call it the Right to Know Law in Pennsylvania. And then I think Florida calls it the Sunshine Law. But it's all basically the same thing with different provisions depending on where you're located. So just looking at some of what's available, we see here in 2013 that these are the different companies that bid on the contract, and it looks like they were scored differently depending on whether it was for first placement or second placements. And there's just a lot of stuff out there in these documents that can help you figure out whether or not it makes sense for you to bid on that contract. And let me just open this up. So we see here that ConServ was selected and General Revenue was selected. It looks like GRC for first placement and ConServ for second placement. So right off the bat, you now know who has the contract. Let's take a look at the cost proposals. So it looks like we have here 8 pages of pricing at the company level on showing which companies submitted pricing for this opportunity. So you can see we have Wyndham, looks like Coast, Southwest Credit Systems, and right on down the line. So you may look at this and you may be highly versed in student loans and in the education space, and you might look at this and say, well, based on this, you know, this is probably something that we would bid on because maybe our standard pricing is 19% and everybody else was between 20 and 25%, or maybe, you know, seconds you're able to do for 20%, everybody else was in the 20s on that. Or you may also see that your pricing is above where people typically would price it for this paper, and you may beg off bidding on this contract for that reason. We realize that the bid process can be quite an undertaking. There are certainly companies on the call today that have entire departments dedicated to writing hundreds of bids per year. There are certainly companies out here that may only do a few in a team-oriented fashion. And there are others on this call who may need to use an outside consultant to help with that. So the last thing you want to do is spend a lot of time bidding on things that you can either, you either cannot win or you would not want to win in the first place, even if you could win it. So looking at this particular opportunity, it looks like we have another technical evaluation document here. Let's take a look at that. And this looks like it's much more detailed information. A lot of times, these documents will have comments by company or by evaluator, or both. So in this particular case, we see a name here, Rich Hampton. And Rich may be someone who is still involved in making these decisions at Georgia Gwinnett College. So a lot of times these documents that you're able to get through Open Records will give you names of people who you can call on in between procurement cycles. So if there are 3 or 4 different names in here, odds are there would be a few of them, even a few years later. As you know, a lot of these bureaucrats stick around for a very long time, especially at the local level. They become very entrenched, and that can be a good thing in terms of knowing who to contact in between the cones of silence in a bid process. We also see in documents like this very specific information. Typically, it'll be in a spreadsheet form like this, or it might be handwritten notes on a document we scanned. And it looks like in this case, the more I look at this, the different colors on the spreadsheet show the names of the different evaluators. So we have an R. Berger here, a T. Farinu, and a V. Snavely, maybe. And it looks like there are initial comments. So you can learn not only what did these people think of the bidders in 2013? What were the things that either gave people more points in 2013? What were things that lost people points in 2013? And how can you use that information to craft answers to questions in the individual RFPs that you might be bidding on today? So this is certainly something. They get very specific online capability to accept accounts and status updates, aware and compliant of TCPA regulations, notes on encryption, FERPA, TCPA, again, red flags rules. So very, very specific information can be available and often is in these kinds of documents. And if it's not about a competitor from 5 years ago, it may be about you. So over time, if you are accessing this information, whether you do it yourself or you use a website for it, what you're able to do is have a very unique way of seeing what does the market think of you? What do they think of your website? What do they think of your data security and compliance and technology platform? How do the comments that they're making about your systems compare to comments that you're reading about other people's systems? And the list goes on and on. So there's value at the contract level to doing this research because it may help you make a big no-bid decision in a better way. And it may ultimately help you win a contract if you focus on the important thing. But it also helps you at the macro level understand how does the marketplace view your company.
Nick, I'm sorry to interrupt for a second, but just wanted to make one comment. We've had a few people, and myself is one of them. If you're sharing a program other than your web browser, when you're in Zoom, you're going to need to sort of share that specific program. So I think you opened an Excel document.
Yes.
On your Zoom control panel.
Yes.
Next time, just share that specific piece of software so that way that shows up. Because right now we're just seeing half of the screen that says that the web browser. So, you know, every time you share something different, you'll need to share that particular piece of software in Zoom, if that makes sense to you.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry about that, guys.
No, that's fine. I apologize.
No problem.
You know, in advance.
No problem. And what I'm going to do, without rehashing all the points I made, I'm just going to give you a quick view of the document that I opened. And let me just figure out. So are we seeing an Excel document yet?
Not yet, no.
Okay, here we go. I found it. And we'll share that. And just
there
let
we
me know
go.
If
now
you
we
see that.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep, absolutely. So without going through everything I just went through, this is the spreadsheet I was referencing, showing some of the individual comments of the individual reviewers. Looks like this person thought only four references wasn't enough, but I guess they meant four. And I'm just going to pull up the other document that I thought would be of interest. Let's see here. Okay, the screen sharing has stopped. So let me share that again. All right, I'm going to open another document here. And let's see if I can share that one.
If you've got the PDF, if it's a PDF document, we can see that.
Okay, good. And it looks like I've got this tool figured out, Mike. Good. All right. So without rehashing everything I said about this document, just showing you that, you know, this is what's actually available at the contract level, showing you the pricing that individual companies submit. And these are documents that are typically mailed to us. So there's a manual component where we're needing to scan documents in order to place them into the system. So I'm just going to pause for a moment and see if there are questions unrelated to sharing.
A good time to pause as well. If there's anybody that has a question, open up the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel, type it in and send it over to Nick, and I'm sure he'll be happy to answer it.
And we're going to look at a few other examples as well, but I also needed a tiny drink of water.
While we wait, just in case, and see if there's a question. Yeah, go ahead. You want to move on to the next one?
Yeah, okay. Yes, and actually we do have a question, and the question is there a way to view the entire proposal that was submitted by the vendor? And we were going to get into that. I'll just jump into it right now. Thank you for the question. And I will open up, let's see what we have here. So the winning proposal itself, and actually all proposals submitted, are equally subject to the open records laws. And think of it this way. Let me just make sure I have the share set up correctly.
Yeah, we can see it fine.
Oh, okay. You can see a PDF.
Because it opened up in your web browser.
In the browser. Okay, I got it. Okay, So these documents are fundamentally public. In other words, they are public by definition. It's just whether or not you choose to access them. And so we are simply accessing them, but you could do this, and my cousin in Florida could do it as well. And so these types of documents, as you know, give you a much more in-depth view into your competition. And again, that is at the company level, but it's also at the macro level. So if you see that you are losing to the same company over and over again in the government space, you can find out how, or you can find out why, or you can make judgments based on their content as to why you are continuously losing to the company, whether it be pricing, whether it be attributes of the company, or whether it be both of those things. And so there are cases where the government agency is able to redact certain things, and we don't fight them on that. We realize companies have trade secrets, but by and large, most of this stuff is public, and you can either get it yourself or get access to it through the site. So thank you for that question. We had a second question. A second question is something that you can purchase. Yes. So you're able to purchase access to the site either at the individual opportunity level. So you can buy credits on the site and then apply those credits to download documents related to a specific RFP. So that's a one-off purchase, and you can do that sporadically. We also have clients that have elected to use the site in a buffet menu style, where they're just paying monthly fees to access the site. So what I'm going to do is move on to an additional opportunity, that I'd like to look at. And I'm going to do that in another browser. All right. So are you able to see a different browser now, Mike?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to move this. And so I just need to limit what this screen is looking at to debt collection only. And this is a test user. So you can see here on the left, we have filters. And this test user is set up in such a way where the test user may have interest in a lot of different industries. And we use this account for testing all the time. So I'm just going to limit what we're looking at under open RFPs to navigate to another. And so this is something for Brevard County, Florida. So in the same way, you can look at historical information and documents that you gather through open records, you really should create a spreadsheet, even if you just do it by a spreadsheet, that has data points about opportunities that you're tracking. So even if you don't use our site, for example, you should be able to document how many dollars does a buyer have that they would like to put out for collection, how many accounts do they have that they would like to put out for collection. These just happen to be what we call the business details that we track in collections. You may have other things on here or that you may track that we simply don't, such as unit yield or other types of things. But these are all data points that you can get through these documents, whether it be through the procurement documents themselves, or we're also doing open records requests against performance reporting at the contract level. So they don't always have reports to give, or they may give us a harder time about getting those. But when we're able to get those, sometimes that could be a year into the contract, and we can update this data so that we know what is actually happening with the contract since they signed the agreements with the vendors. And that includes estimated revenue and so on and so forth. And we'll take a look at the documents here. So it looks like we have 19 older documents. And in the same manner, we had winning proposals, we had contracts. And we should talk about a contract for a minute, because there are oftentimes cases where we've seen this happen before, where a client or someone will be awarded a contract, and something may come up between the award of the contract and the contract itself that may scare them off, and they may say, you know what, I'm really not interested in tripling my insurance costs or doing something that may be requested in the contract that maybe wasn't disclosed during the bid process. So this is another way that you can try to winnow the list down of contracts that you would actually pursue, is by getting access to the contract itself that the vendors have signed in the past to see if there's anything in it that you just would not be interested in terms of having this as a client or as a contract that you're servicing. So we also, in the same manner, we have rankings here. Let's take a look at what we have here. It looks like this is a two-page document, and it looks like it's showing the companies that bid. It looks like Steve Swank was an important person on the scoring committee last time. And it looks like we're seeing that only two companies went after this last time. And again, we have names of people here that that might still be with Brevard County. So these are names that you want to have on file that you can get through these open records requests. Certainly not now that the bid's open, you would not be able to contact them now, but between bid cycles is certainly something that you could do. And there's a third opportunity that I'd like to look at. Let me just go to that one as well. West Virginia. So a lot of times companies are hesitant to even try to go down the road of pursuing government contracts because, you know, the perception may be, well, I just can't win any of them, or we haven't been successful. So I always like to tell people that if you have no government experience, you should really only be bidding on two types of contracts. One, contracts that you may know have where the buyer has not been able to get any bid. So that happens from time to time. So it might be housing authority debt or a tiny minuscule amount of miscellaneous debt for a town no one's ever heard of. And they may put out an RFP, and the larger companies that may have hundreds of these contracts or even dozens or even a handful just may say, you know what, I'm not interested in doing business with a town of that size or for that type of debt. So you want to look for contracts where there might be evidence that no one has bid on them before. And those happen from time to time. Another one that we like to tell people to focus on are contracts where they have to award to the lowest responsible bidder. And a common misconception is that pricing drives every government contract award. And that actually is not true, although it does happen. So think of it this way. They have RFQs, and that is a request for quote. And a lot of times when they use the term RFQ, what they're really asking for is a quote for a particular product that has a model number. So if they're buying, I don't know, computers, and they want to buy 10 laptops, they would say, this is the exact laptop we want to buy. We need 10 of them. Give us a quote. And so that is certainly going to be the lowest responsible bidder. It's the same product. But generally in a service environment, such as account collections, it's not an RFQ. It would be an RFC where they're saying, look, we want debt collected. Tell us how you would do that in the form of a proposal. But even though that is the case sometimes, such as the state of West Virginia, it is driven by the lowest rate. So it may be driven 100% by the lowest rate plus a proposal that is compliant with the process that they want you to follow. Or it may be an opportunity where more than half of the scoring or most of the scoring is weighted towards pricing, or just enough of the scoring is weighted towards pricing where you may have a legitimate chance of winning. So for this particular opportunity, we do see that they tend to have new vendors every few years because there are different categories of debt. And let me just see if I can find the document that shows that. And this is opening in a browser. So Mike, you'll tell me if you can't see it.
You are all good. Thanks, Nick.
And so it looks like they had 8 different commodities in 2015 where you had a chance to win there were potentially 8 different awards for this opportunity. And so I know we have in here pricing for the individual classes, and I just need to find find which document that is. So we'll just take this one, for example, and this is a PDF that's outside of the browser. So let me see if I can share it.
No, we're good. I can see it.
Oh, you're good. Okay. Okay. Yep. So here is a 33-page contract that certainly has in there something. Let me just see if I can hide this. This would be a 33-page contract, and it looks like it is in there. And a lot of times you really have to dig through these documents to find out what the rates are that are contracted. So this looks like a rate of 5.98% for colleges and universities. And that is certainly on the low end of what we see in these government contracts. A lot of times there are companies that are sophisticated enough to know that if they want to get into a new market, they really have to drive the rate down in order to do that. So certainly you don't want to make a habit of that, but I think that's why we're seeing a rate here that we're seeing for college and student loan debt. And with that, I'm just going to stop for a moment before we move on to the next content area and see if there are any questions.
You can get your drink and I'll ask the first question for you. There are a couple of questions that came in asking roughly how many RFPs, how many clients or customers are on the site at any given point in time.
So we have, at any given time there, and we talked about this before the call, Mike, there are literally hundreds of opportunities per year. And the way we define an opportunity is something that has a procurement that year. So this year there may be close to 300 open opportunities that come and go throughout 2018. But we also track another class of opportunities, and those are upcoming opportunities. So the open opportunities are things where you only have 3 weeks to bid on them. But if you look at the upcoming opportunities, there's a few hundred of those at any given time. So there are literally hundreds, upwards of 500 per year that you can either pursue through the bid process or pursue through a direct sales process. I also see a question here about GSA. And GSA, and for those who may not on this call know that acronym, is the General Services Administration. It's a federal agency. And the answer is no, you do not have to have a GSA contract to bid on any state or local contract. You also do not have to have it to bid on many federal contracts. However, at the federal level, a buyer can require that you have a GSA contract. But it's not something that typically happens. It has happened in our industry. It will happen again, but it's not the default. Okay. So at that, I'm going to move to another part of the site. And this is another type of public information that you also can get access to, whether it be through our site or through your own diligent research. And those are the upcoming opportunities that I just mentioned. And we're just going to take a look at one, and we'll tell you a little bit about, you know, why we think it's important to look at this kind of thing and what you can do with that information. And let me just, I need to reset that and redo that search. Okay, so I was looking at this one earlier. This is Travis County, Texas. And if you're going to do this on your own, what you can do is keep a spreadsheet. And once you do your open records request and you're able to get, let's say, a contract showing you who was awarded and what, you know, what's actually in the contract, as we all know, contracts generally have start and end dates, and they have terms on the base term of the contract, as well as any possible extensions under the contract. So what we like to do is we like to track what we call the earliest next release date and the latest next release date. So the earliest next release date is a date that we populate in the system, assuming that the buyer does not exercise any of the options under the contract. And the latest next release date is a date that assumes that the buyer will exercise all options under the contract. And so this information also tracks back to a contract document itself. And let's just take a look and see if we can find it. So here's the contract between HeliCorp and Travis County, Texas. And it looks like we have the contract term begins on March 7th, 2014, 2 years, 3 one-year options. And why is that important? So there are certainly companies out there that have had success in two different ways with government contracts. And I'll just make a distinction between the two. There are companies, even some on this call, who have success simply bidding on contracts when they come out and doing just that. And certainly that's one approach. There are also companies on this call and also among our other clients who will study these kinds of dates, and they may make it part or make these dates part of their marketing efforts and their efforts to go meet with people. So there's nothing preventing you, for example, of contacting Travis County prior to the bid that we're expecting them to have next year and saying, hey, we understand that you had a bid process in 2014. And if you have that information, you might say, we know that you hired Hila Corporation and Linebarger, Goggin and Blair. How's that going? Are you looking to replace the vendor? Are you looking to add a vendor? Is there anything that you wish you could get from your vendors that you're not getting? And they're able to answer those questions. And to the extent that you hear things that might indicate they're interested in making a change, that's certainly something that you can act on. We have salespeople who tell us that what they'll do is maybe they know they're going to Chicago in 3 months for some meeting or some conference. What they'll do is they'll look and see, well, what's coming out in that part of the country in the next year? And maybe they'll try to piggyback on some other traveling that they're already doing if they're able to find opportunities that that are in their wheelhouse, things that they would be likely to bid on, contracts that they might want after reviewing those. And it looks like there's over 1,000 that are coming up in the next year or so. And I'm just looking at the list here. You could do this on a spreadsheet. We certainly have a filtering tool that lets you filter not only by location, but also by type of government agency or by state. So 1 minute you could do a search and say, show me state contracts west of the Mississippi coming out in 2019. And then you might say, show me healthcare contracts in the Southeast coming out over the summer. And the system will show you that. Okay, I'm not seeing additional questions.
One just came in, did you see it?
Okay, so a question, do they look for vendors that have prior government experience or that are minority women-owned businesses? The answer is yes and no. And I wish I could give you a hard and fast rule on that. But that's really what you'll find in government contracting is there's a lot of misconceptions out there. Whenever anyone tries to make a broad brush statement about government contracting, that's usually when you should stop listening, because by and large, there certainly are opportunities where they want you to have prior government experience. And there's certainly opportunities where they give preference if you are a minority vendor in a certain state or a certain county or a certain city, or if the proposing vendor is planning to use minority companies to do part of the work. So those certainly do happen, but they are certainly not in the majority. By and large, when the requirements of bids are written, they may not say that they want you to have government experience, but when it comes down to it, they may tend to go with those kinds of companies. And as far as maybe utilization, minority-owned companies, women-owned companies, generally, you're going to see that having more value when the jurisdiction itself has a program that is a formal program. So for example, Cook County, Illinois, New York City, New York State, Texas, the state of Texas. So those are examples of some jurisdictions that have formal programs where they are often asking that the vendor subcontract work to those kinds of companies, or where they may give preferential treatment to prime bidders that might be women-owned or minority-owned, but those typically do not carry the day. And what I mean by that is, even if they say they're giving credit to a company, if it's a minority-owned company in Cook County, Illinois, well, that may only move the needle 5 or 10% of the scoring, and it would not carry the day in most cases. Okay, and we'll do some more questions. I'm just going to cover one more thing. Another thing you're able to get, if you're able to keep a spreadsheet on this, if you're going to do this research yourself, is pricing at the individual contract level, and actually keeping a spreadsheet just on different companies and what prices they're submitting. So we certainly have a tool that lets you look up what companies are offering at the company level. But again, this is something that, this is research you could do yourself, keep your own files on it if you're just looking to research a couple of contracts that might be of interest. So we call it the Vendor Center. And this, what we're doing when we get these documents in and we process them through, scan them, and put information into the site about these different contracts, is we are entering line item pricing details at the company level against individual opportunities. So just as an example, Sunrise Credit Services in February submitted bids to the University of North Dakota and submitted these rates. And so in doing this, what that enables our clients to do who are using this part of the site, they're able to do very granular searches on what their competition is proposing. So for example, let me just do one here. Let's take a look. Let's just look at RFPs that involve utility accounts. And let's only look at those for the last two completed calendar years, for example. And let's see what comes back. So here are 323 results. And so these would be contracts that include utility accounts. And as you realize that there are filters at the buyer level, this can become very granular. So you might say, well, I know I'm bidding against these five companies for this government contract because they were all bidders last time, or we know that they operate in that city or that state. Well, you can come here and literally type in or select those companies and do discrete filters against those companies. And so I'll just pick one here. And so now what we're going to be looking at are bids submitted for contracts involving utility accounts in 2016 and 2017, where account control technology was a bidder. And so that lets you almost predict what the other companies might submit. Now, you can do that if you're researching individual companies, but you can also do that, and you may be bidding on something today, and you might say, you know what, I want to see every student loan price where the average balance is between $2,000 and $3,000 in the last 5 years. And what the system will let you do, because all of the data points that we have at the contract level are in these filters. So let's just do this and further filter it and say, show me things between $2 and $500. And now there are only two results. So now we're further limiting what we're looking at. So we have another question. Do you track all RFPs or just those from larger government agencies? For example, do you capture an RFP for small cities, towns, or counties? So we're never going to be able to make the claim that we will have every single RFP every time. What we are able to say is that if the RFP is generally available, if it's out there online, we're probably going to have it. And from that standpoint, it doesn't matter whether the town has 10,000 people or 5 million people. If it's out there online, we're probably going to have it. So we have a question. Do you have a scorecard, so to speak, that measures the differing variables and gives you an idea on whether an RFP is bid worthy? Boy, I feel like I need to mail you a check because you just tossed me a softball. And I'm happy to give you this answer. We have been developing something that is an algorithm that will help companies figure out what is more bid worthy. And we're calling it the sniper rating. And it's something that we're going to be launching in early 2019. And so what that algorithm is going to do is look at your company and data we have about your company, what other contracts you may have in the system if you are a government contractor, or if you're not a government contractor, where are you located versus the buyer, how much time is there left in the bid process, and other factors. And we're going to assign a score to that that translates to a rating, not different than rating systems that you see for restaurants or movies or hotels. So you'll see that at the RFP level when there are open RFPs, and you might see something and you might say, well, my GovWatch says that this is 4 out of 5. Why are they saying that? And that might cause you to look into it, or maybe you have an employee that's new to the company and may not know everything about the company. Something like that would be highly valuable to that employee. And then after we launch that tool, we're going to be adding further to it so that you're able to put parameters into it that may increase the score or lower the score. So for example, you might tell the system at some point that you really want average balances over $1,000, or maybe you like low balances. Maybe that would increase the score. So we're going to extend that at some point so that you're able to increase or decrease the score based on attributes that are specific to you. So thanks for that question. Okay, the last thing that we were going to look at, and this is something we touched on in the beginning, and this goes back to researching companies through public documents. So this part of the vendor center turns the data on its head and says, okay, we're not looking at pricing, we're looking at documents about specific companies, and you can see there's over 6,000 documents in the system. And we're going to do the same thing. We saw, unfortunately, this company was an A, so it popped up first. We're just going to look at what we have on them. So account control technology, we have 92 documents, and it looks like here's their winning proposal from 2018, from February of this year. So you can literally just go to that opportunity on the site and very quickly see that document. Oh, we'll just take a look at Williams and Fudge anyway. So it looks like they gave us the cost proposal and they gave us a redacted proposal. And it's important that you know that this goes into the category of showing you that just because you've asked for a document, that still gives the government the right to redact things that the vendor may deem as confidential. But there may certainly be information in here that no one deems confidential, or the law does not support it being confidential, that might be of interest. And what we also see is that perhaps a document from this particular bid process is confidential, but something submitted elsewhere was not confidential. So ultimately, if you really want to read about a certain company, you can do that. Let me just go to the right one here. So you're also able to look at documents in the same manner that you looked at pricing. And so if you're not researching a particular company, you're certainly able to look at winning proposals in a certain segment of the industry. And let me just give an example. So if you were interested in companies that win student loan contracts, for example, you can do a search and say, show me winning proposals involving student loans. And it looks like there's about 1,500 of those. So if you want to get into a new market, this is a very quick way of learning quickly what are the leading companies in that space doing to win these contracts. What conferences are they going to? What skip tracing tools are they using? We've even had people tell us that they find acquisition opportunities by using this tool. We had a question. In the vendor center, is this filtering all submitted RFP responses or just vendors that were awarded? And is there a way to filter this won versus lost? Great question. We do have a visual indicator, and it looks like none of these are winning proposals. But if this icon here, this trophy is yellow, that means the vendor was awarded. But typically, we're able to obtain winning and unsuccessful proposals as well. So in that, from that standpoint, that furthers your ability to research, and you could look at either, you can look at those that were successful or not successful and learn from both. And so, Mike, with that, I think I am through all of the content that I was planning to cover. I think you might have scheduled us for an hour. I certainly have more time if there are more questions.
There was one question that came in, and I don't know whether you wanted to take a crack at this, but that was sort of, what assistance or advice do you give to an agent, would you give to an agency with minimal experience in responding to an RFP? And I know you talked a little bit before about the two types of contracts that you would recommend starting out with, but I wasn't sure there's any other advice that you might want to share with the audience.
Yes. So if you have minimal experience responding to RFPs, then you want to try to pick ones that are more straightforward. And that may be a skill in and of itself, but the more of these that you look at, the more you can spot the ones, pardon me, that that may only be 20 questions, or that may be 20 pages long instead of 100 pages long, or that may not have 15 forms that they need you to fill out at the end. So you certainly want to tend to bid on things that where the response requirements are more simplistic. So that would be a third tier. So tiers one and two would be tend to bid on things that other people aren't bidding on, tend to bid on things where pricing is at a premium so that you're able to overcome any lack of experience by focusing on pricing, and tend to bid on things that are just simply easier for you to respond to. I would also add that in the early parts of the year, there are so many opportunities that even the big guys can't bid on all of them, or their parameters for what they would bid on might become a higher bar. So when things get busy in February and March, you should definitely be looking at things to bid on, because the numbers of bidders simply go down the more opportunities there are out there.
Would you advise an agency to sort of only maybe focus on one or two RFPs at a time, or expand and throw out as many as they can? How would you sort of manage the potential workflow there?
The potential workflow is unlimited. And that is why there are companies in our industry that certainly have entire departments of people writing bids. But again, there are companies that may have five or six people working on a handful of them per year, and another group of companies that might outsource some of that. So I would say that, you know, there are some companies that like a laser-like approach, and those companies are going to have a higher win rate. But companies that are bidding on a lot of contracts would probably win more contracts, although their win rate will certainly go down. So it's sort of a cost benefit that each company has to make for itself. But we've seen both strategies work, depending on what the goal is. If the goal is to have government contracting be a big part of your company, then certainly sending out more bids is going to help. But if you really just, you know, want a handful of them and you want to make selections on which to go after in a highly selective way, then we've seen that be successful too.
Got it. Here's a very important question that came in. Your contact info for anybody that wants to engage in discussions with you.
Okay, so I will read it off, but what I should also say is that we'll send a quick email out, and Mike, I guess you'd help us with that, with the contact information. But my direct dial number is 267-471-9591. And that is probably the best way to reach me. And if you leave a voicemail, if you miss me, just mention that you were on the teleseminar, leave an email address, and then I would send you an email. And I'll give you my email address as well. It's nick@net4results, and that's plural with an S at the end, .com.
nick@netgain4results.com.
Yes, sir.
We're almost out of time. I don't see any more questions in the queue, but I wanted to maybe give you the chance to sort of summarize, offer any takeaways, any key points, any parting words of wisdom for people as we wrap up the webinar today.
Yes, it's never been easier to do a lot of this. And what I mean by that is this. Desktop publishing has become easier. More people are comfortable with desktop publishing than ever, so it's easier to put bids together. If you choose to do some of this research yourself, we've seen evidence that electronic fulfillment is further along now than it ever has been, where they might respond to your request in 3 or 6 months, but when they do, it's an email and it's not a stack of paper a foot tall. So now is sort of the best time to get into this market. There are certainly dozens of companies that are very competitive in this market. There's always room for more. And we realize that there is still a lot of untapped market potential out there with smaller and smaller cities and counties that have not outsourced that probably will.
Excellent. Well, Nick, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks for taking us through the site. Overwhelmed, I guess, by the depth of information that's on there, and I hope everybody enjoyed your presentation as much as I did. Also, wanted to thank MyGovWatch again for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.mygovwatch.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions today. A recording of this event will be posted to accountsrecovery.net in the next few days. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. And again, thanks again, Nick, and I hope everybody else enjoys the rest of their day.
Thank you, Mike, and thank everyone else.